Okay, thank you, Lynn. Can everybody hear me? Or can anybody hear me? Okay, very good. Very good. I just caught the end of that, but what I heard was lovely. Yeah, sounded great. I might look at her some more. She was really inspiring. As Lynn said, my name is Jacqueline Eckert. You all don't hear from me very often, but you do hear from me occasionally. This is one of those occasions. I am very honored to be able to conduct this satsang with our own Nikki Dobson. Nikki is one of the founding members of Awakening Together by the Grace of God, of the Goddess. That's correct. Nikki is one of our founding members. She serves on our member board. She is a, she's an ordained minister. She'll tell you about that, I assume. And she's a licensed minister with Awakening Together. So I am going to, yay, Nikki. So I am going to let go of the mic and let Nikki just tell us a little bit about herself. And Nikki, if you want to kind of give us your story in terms of both who you appear to be, you know, in this world, and where you seem to be on your path. And so I'll let go of the mic, Nikki.
Oh, where I seem to be on the path. But before I start talking, because I have talked for like 5 or 10 minutes before, and nobody could hear me, so I just wanted to make sure everybody could hear me. Wonderful. Look at everybody who's here. Wonderful. Hi, everybody. Jacqueline, thank you so much, sweetheart. What an honor it is to be here today. I don't know why I'm here, but I do. What I do know for sure is that when I was asked to do so, the answer was yes. No matter what the mind came up and said, the mind always has some kind of thing to come up and say, but the answer is always yes. The first thing that I would like to share is, first of all. And I've shared it on Pal Talk before. I've shared bits and pieces of it. The beautiful. I'm gonna quickly leave the microphone and turn on my heater down because it's gonna blow really hard in the microphone. So hold on 1 second. So I was born in Las Vegas, Nevada to a 13-year-old, two 13-year-olds, a 13-year-old girl and a 13-year-old boy, and was given up to for adoption as soon as I was born. The couple that adopted me took me straight to California, and I was raised there until I believe I was 4.5 years old. And at that time, I do not know the circumstances. I've been told many different things. But my grandmother at the time had called her other children and said that I needed to be removed from the home before the authorities were going to be called. And so they came and they picked me up. My aunt and uncle from this point on are going to be called my mom and my dad. And they raised me in Utah. Now, when they adopted me, one of the things that they did first is they felt that it was important to pretend or ignore any questions that I had about ever being with another family. And this is one of my first memories, and I can remember thinking, bless their hearts, they can't deal with the truth. So I can really, really, really remember beginning right then and thinking to myself that that I was going to play a character. And matter of fact, a few times I recall laying on a trampoline. I was laying on a trampoline in my cousin's backyard and looking at the stars and looking at all around me and thinking to myself, I wonder how long this character will last. Another time I was laying in the back of my family station wagon. You remember those old station wagons with the paneling on the on the sides? And, you know, back then not wearing seat belts or much of anything. I was laying down and I was looking out into the stars. And I was wondering close to the same thing. Now, just like any character that someone might play, you know, I've heard many actors and actresses share that when they play a role for a long period of time, they take on those traits, they take on those conditioning that character might have. And just like that, I don't remember thinking like that ever again. I became quite identified with this and heavily believed that I was bad, that I was horrid, and that everybody was going to leave me sooner or later, and that I was unlovable. And so from that preconceived idea, everything that happened, and it could be before then, you know, it could have been something that was believed before then. Matter of fact, I've had a holotropic breathing where I've experienced me in the womb excited to find out what it was going to be like to pretend that I was something that I could never be. Right? Like, love is all that's there, that's all that's present, and I'm about to go in and experience something that could never be possible. But I deeply, deeply believed that I was this horrid, horrible thing. And I have to remember not to look at the board, because when I look at the board, I get distracted very easy. So Regina gave me a pointer some time ago for me not to look at the board. So if you do raise your hand, then I will pause and I will let go of the mic. But as I was saying, so many years forward, fast forward, I had left the Mormon Church. I was raised in the Mormon Church. I was graduated religion with honors, not because I was a good little student, but because the seminary teacher said that if I stopped raising my hand and stopped asking questions, then I could pass with honors. So I passed with honors. I'm not quite sure how much I listened, but I did pass with honors. So anyway, I had nothing to do with spirituality, with religion. Anybody would discuss or have any comments about it, and I would tune them out. Matter of fact, my husband had Celestine Prophecy, 14 years ago, and at the time, I threw it away. I think I hit it first, and then I completely threw it away. And so not only was I uncomfortable with it, I was terrified that if it was in my house, something was going to happen. So it's not that I left religion. I had still carried around all of the beliefs that I had taken into religion. As I said, it wasn't, you know, once I picked up those beliefs, I was going to take it no matter where I was. So I reached a place that I wanted to end my life. And I remember the moment that I was sitting in the car about to do it. and the thought came in that I was not going to escape it. That if I ended the body, I was still going to have to deal with what was coming up. That wasn't going to be the end of it. And I had never, I almost can say that I had never heard of such a thing. I don't know that for sure, but I can almost say that considering, how terrified I was at talking about anything spiritual. And in that moment, I decided that I was going to become willing to do whatever it took to find out the truth of me, to find out the truth. It was not a comfortable ride, of course, because as I went into this healing, and teachers did appear for me, I was still carrying that strong held belief that I was bad and unworthy, and no matter what I began to look at, no matter what I began to become willing to share, still there was underneath that this idea that I was horrible, that I was this horrid human. And first, for me, I went into the 12 steps. I walked into the 12-step rooms. And which is so amazing and so wonderful. The first person that I met and became connected to and became my mentor was somebody that, she's no longer here, but she really had the ability to get me to see that pretending and playing that character and playing the role like things were different than what they were was really not that helpful. And the amazing part of that is that I began to start telling the truth blamelessly. She taught me how to do that blamelessly. Because before that, I loved to shift blame. I loved to put blame on others and project that on other people. I didn't have the tools to know that I believed heavily that I was bad. I just thought that everybody else was bad and they were going to leave me. So she really taught me to start looking. She really taught me to start coming out of denial. And she taught me about this silly, silly little thing called feelings. I remember the first time she asked me, she said, "What are you feeling?" And I went, I don't know what you're talking about. But to make a long story short, she really taught me about these feelings. And the only thing that is really, really blows my mind away today is that resistance, that deep conditioned resistance to a feeling, to pretend like it wasn't there, to stuff it, to numb it, to, you know, I like to call it chasing my tail. Because no matter where I went, there I was, and those beliefs were following me no matter where I went. I didn't know how to allow those feelings to come up or to just be felt. It's amazing how feelings come and go, and they're not the truth of us. But as long as I'm running from them, you know, just so interesting. Trying to think of where to go from here. What time is it? It's 7:45. I'm going to turn it over to you. Here you go, Jacqueline.
That was great, Nikki. Thanks. I got a big a big chuckle when you got through talking and asked what time it was. No, it's not been an hour and a half yet. thanks. That's that was great to hear your story. I had not heard it, so it's very, very interesting. So I have a couple of things that I want to ask you about based on what you told us. First, I want to ask you about this point. You said you'd reached a place where you wanted to end your life, and I think that Well, I have a similar story, and I think that a lot of people on this path have that story. In fact, I think the course talks about that in terms of it talks about many men on seeing this have ended their lives, on seeing the meaninglessness of life. When if they could have, and I don't know how the course goes on to say it, but if they could have just taken that further step, then I don't know. That's the way to enlightenment. I do think that a lot of people share that story. So I wanted to ask you when that was, and I wanted to ask you to tell us a little bit more about the grace that led you from that point of meaninglessness. So I'm going to turn the mic back over to you for that purpose. Thanks.
Thank you. I would say that moment that I wanted to end my life, I had given everything a meaning. And that meaning was, I look back on all of the situations and all the things that occurred, and it was life simply happening, and I gave it a meaning. I said that it meant that I was this. I said that it meant I was that. I had given things a meaning, and I wasn't even aware that I had done so. And so there's a little bit, I understand that your question was asked in a different way, but my head just can't even... I'm trying to figure out how to go there, but truthfully, when I'm identified as this horrible human being, I give everything the meaning to support that. Although this was the Christmas after September 11th. It was the September 11th that really helped me fall to my knees and get to that place of deep surrender. I also want to share, before I go on, I really want to share that I almost had 8 years. 8 years, and I had really experienced quite a shift. A lot of peace. Was helping a lot of people, was really deep in the course. And I decided for myself, and this is such an egoic decision, because now from the place I'm at today, I see that things fall away and we're moved to do things. But when we do something, or when I did this, it was totally out of ego. I decided I was beyond the 12 steps. I was past it, and I really stopped working it. And it was right after my mentor had passed away, my sponsor had passed away. She had just passed away. And I had to really, really hit that exact same place. And I don't even know how to explain it, but I was getting ready for work one day and was lying to myself and was really deeply back into the character and playing games and lying to others. And my body said, screw you. I am not going anywhere. And I hit the floor and I was in a fetal position, and I literally felt as though there was no place for me to go. And I'm sure a lot of you know Lisa Trevino. Lisa Trevino came to my house that day, and there's just a little thing that she did for me. She leaned over and she whispered in my ear, honey, you've just forgotten who you are. You have forgotten who you are. And that was 5 years ago. And in that moment, that was the space that I realized that there was nothing that the personality, that this false self that I wanted. And it's not, it's it's definitely not in a in a judgmental and condemning way. It was in the most loving, compassionate way possible. You know, it was just love loving itself right there in that moment and no longer wanting to pick it up. Now, there are, I shouldn't say that I didn't, I'm egoless and that in that moment I completely shed myself of all ideas of Nikki. That is not true. That is not true at all. But that addictive tendency to constantly listen to the thoughts and believe these thoughts are me, or these wave of emotions are me, or this sickness. You know, I was getting migraines at the time. Because if I can be any of this, I looked at the, as you can tell, I looked at the board again. Because experience is not ultimate, right? I can have these experiences and these constant awarenesses, but if I can be moved out of them, or I forget who I am, then that could never be. So still, even with a new way of seeing, it's still not the ultimate truth. What is unchanging. But one thing that has happened for me is that all of the beloveds, every single character that played a role in my life, no matter what the role looked like in my life, I am honored. Okay, I'm going to turn over the mic.
Thanks, Nikki. I just wonder if you could go on and tell us more about, and you had mentioned this to me. I should say that when it came up that Nikki was going to talk for this month's Satsang, I was really thrilled to hear that, because Nikki and I had a nice long talk and walk when we got together for the Choose Again retreat in Colorado, and Nikki and I had talked about some of these same ideas, and this thought that when you're laying on the floor in a fetal position, and that there was nothing of your personality I tried to take a note on it here, nothing of your personality that you wanted anymore. You know, this, to me, this seems really similar to, Byron Katie's story about, laying on the floor, not feeling even deserving of being in a bed, seeing the cockroach crawl across her foot. It reminds me of, Eckhart Tolle's story about, going, I just can't live with myself. And then wondering who the two separate eyes were, right? Who's the eye that can't live with the other eye? And I see that that Robbie has written here, let go, right? So I get all of that, and I get that, you know, on an intellectual level, again, I get what Robbie's writing about, the surrender, and certainly I know that I'm trying to practice surrender, but I'm the cockroach one, but I'm really and maybe you can't put words to it, I don't know. But is there any way, you know, I'd love to emulate you and Byron Katie and Eckhart Tolle, and perhaps it's just grace. Perhaps there's no emulation to be done. But if you could be more descriptive about that, that would be very helpful. If you can't say that, and if you want me to ask another question, move on, we can do that. And folks, I want to remind you to feel free to raise your hand and ask Nikki questions as well. But Nikki, I don't know if you can describe that more or not, but I'll let go of the mic and give you an opportunity to try.
Hmm. another way I can say this is that I feel that, and some people that are in here have heard me word this way. If love could speak, if love used words, the ultimate unconditional love could use words, I call it the internal loving parent. Right? And I had never really paid attention or listened to that. I was constantly listening to that critical voice, that nagging, you know, you're never going to get it right. And so I began to desire to listen to only that voice. So this is still not the ultimate experience, but this is a bridge experience that I needed at the time. You know, and I had that tool before 5 years ago. I had used that tool, but it was really mixed, if that makes sense. And in that moment, that surrender, I became willing to listen more completely to this voice, to this loving voice. Now, the paradox of it all, the paradox of it all is that there is no loving, internal loving parent. Right? Are you willing to be loves? Be in loves? I don't know what that means. But, Jacqueline, I'm not sure if I answered your question or if you'd like to answer me in a different way. I'm not sure if I really got to it, but it's really important for me to share that from that moment, there wasn't what has happened today. Right? Today, it's much different than 5 years ago. I was still needing to identify myself as something separate, as something different. And I've also shared before that I think gurus are very helpful. Until we find that loving parent, that loving voice, that constant voice within, I think a guru is very helpful because I can become distracted and start listening to this voice and think that I'm it. When I am connected with that loving parent, that inner Holy Spirit, right? That critical voice can come and go. Those feelings can come and go. Emotions can come and go. All of this can move and flow. There's just nothing to grab a hold of. But I will turn the mic over to you if you'd like to ask another question. Oh. I'm not sure who Starman is. That they think I like to be critical of myself. I really don't see it that way. To be honest with you, I feel that I feel that I'm really at a point that I can simply be honest, and there is nothing inside of me that is criticizing. There is only love for this, only love. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. A couple of us have the question, as you mentioned, a teacher, and Lynn was asking, and I was asking Nikki, who your teacher was, who your guru was, and so we'd like to hear that from you. And I think you went a long way towards answering my question. I guess that I personally find myself at a point where I would like to practice surrender, and I am practicing surrender in a lot of ways. I still very much see that part of my personality that wants to be right, wants to be accepted, you know, and I practice surrender at every point. So I'm wondering if you would agree that timing depends a lot on grace. That's the way it feels to me, and maybe I'm just kidding myself, but that's the way it feels to me. But yeah, also if you could address that. If you can't, that's great. We can let that one go. In addition, we'd like to know who your guru is, was. Okay, I'm letting go of the mic. Back to you, Nikki.
Yeah, I giggle because there's still this idea that like a timetable, right? Like there's this kind of timetable that really for me is that if I have a timetable, I'm not in acceptance of what is right now. No matter how I'm showing up or no matter what's coming up for myself, just really being present with what is right now, that to me is the surrender. You know, that I always had this, okay, I've already done this, this, and this, and I'm not awakened, or I've done this, this, and this, and I'm still beating up on myself, I'm still condemning myself, I still believe I am bad, which goes to what I really want to touch quickly, that will my mentor, my 12-step mentor, my 12-step sponsor is the one that really taught me that I can't ignore the I am bad thought because I'm going to take it into every situation, which includes I am bad thought or I am not enough, which includes I'm not getting it right. I should be further along by now, right? I'm listening to this person on YouTube, and why can't I be like them? It's all the same thing, this idea that I need to be someplace other than what is right here. And so she really taught me, my beloved Heather, they're all my beloveds, no matter what experience they brought for me. She really, really taught me to start looking at what I was believing about myself. Not about the situation and why these people did that or why they did this and how that affected me and that's why I believe this right now. She really got me to go back to that little girl, go back to the situation and see how she felt. And when I did so, I found out that I believed that I was bad because of this situation. So learning that this belief was there is like pulling out the covers to see what's underneath. And I kept trying to, you know, keep the covers down, keep the rug done, and keep dusting stuff underneath that. But when I do that, everywhere I go, I am bringing those beliefs with me. So nothing is altering, nothing is changing. So for me, it's really important that if something is coming up and I think I should be someplace other than where I'm at, there's a belief that I'm holding. And so that is most important. Because can't I be anywhere? Right? Can I be in acceptance no matter where I'm at? No matter what the situation is? And I began to have deep, deep compassion for all the characters in the play, and that included myself. And then after my sponsor passed away, my mentor at the time passed away, I began to notice that I was needing a consistent, some symbol that was consistent, that was somebody that I could speak to. And this is really funny because I asked Regina, will you be my guru? And she said yes. She hated it. She really did. She didn't like that at all. But the beautiful part of that is that the only time that, you know, that it was just a symbol. It was that consistency that I needed. And I remember calling her up one time. It was the one time that I really had a lot of stuff coming up. And I called her and we sat in silence for 20 minutes. We sat in complete silence for 20 minutes and it just went still. Everything went still. I would say that it took 10 minutes to get there, but then it just all went still, and that's all that was needed. That was all that was needed. You know, that heart-going mind that is called the resting mind. And that mind improves by practice, by doing just that, right? Becomes, and that's what I think of purification, of finding out where what my beliefs are that I'm bringing into every situation. We're just training the personality. We're training this idea of myself to surrender. That's where the surrender to me comes from. Okay, David's going to word it differently for me. Jacqueline had asked about the grace twice now, along the lines of, do you think readiness to surrender comes from grace? And I think that's what I'm talking about right now, is that, you know, that training of the mind, or the looking at the beliefs and looking that to see that that is not what I am, is really, really ripening oneself to grace. But what was most important to me that I really wanted to share with the utmost love is that that is part of ripening oneself, is that surrender and being in complete acceptance and willingness to see what is here right now, right here. I'm going to give the mic to you, loves.
Thank you, Nikki. I think what you're saying is beautiful. And maybe I'm asking you for something that you cannot give me. I wonder if you can see how this idea, these ideas that you have expressed are difficult for some of us to grasp. And you know, everybody in this room, I think nearly everybody in this room has been looking at these, if you will, spiritual concepts for quite some time. And it sounds fabulous to talk about ripening yourself by surrendering. But I'm just wondering, I've always been a real fan of practical tools. And I will tell you earlier though, Robbie says to be practical, but I will tell you that, before our call here, I was listening to Gangaji, who I love. And I will tell you that this quote from Gangaji, she said, "The truth is utterly simple and cannot be practiced. Suffering is utterly complex and must be practiced." So you know, and maybe you will tell us the same thing about practice. But let me ask you if you have a practice that you recommend for surrender, or if you have a practice that you practice now, or if you think practice and the idea of practice is the problem. I'll let go of the mic.
Hi. Why would anyone practice suffering? Most importantly, when I began hearing the word surrender, I didn't know what the heck they were talking about. Surrender what? So the six-step process, Regina's root cause inquiry, Byron Katie's The Work. I mean, all of these, you know, the 12-step programs, all of these are tools of surrendering, of, and I used to think this word was just a bad, bad word, to be devoted, disciplined. I thought these were all really bad words. To really just, surrender does equal letting go, but I didn't understand what that meant. You know, how do I let it go? And that's the biggest thing, is that the work and the six-step process by Choose Again. I'm trying to think of other things that I know of. There's just many, many different programs that are helpful tools, and I've used them all. I don't think there's anything that I haven't touched on. And then I got to a point where I could do the Who Am I? I could do the inquiry. Yeah, the Jurjeff. I could get to the point to be able to do the inquiry. Who am I? And that, by the time I got to Who Am I and I got to Ramana Maharshi's questioning, by the time I got to that, I just feel like, how do we have any idea when this happens? That is grace. It is grace. All of it is grace. Me on the floor in a puddle is grace. Me in the car was grace. Right? Yeah. All of it. But my migraines. Oh my goodness, I can't even begin to tell you. The migraines that I was experiencing, and I kept going, you know, what are they here to teach me? What are they here for? You know, what am I believing about myself? And I really kept fighting and arguing with what was. And I remember one day just simply allowing the migraine to happen and seeing how deeply I was identified as the one that was healthy and the one that was sick. And so if I'm identified with what is in this moment, so what I'm really genuinely telling you is that life just shows up for us and gives us those opportunities for surrendering and to go in deeper. And I couldn't bypass looking at what I believed about myself in any given situation. You know, it's quite instant for me now. I don't have to go through a six-step process. I don't have to say to my little girl, which I did share, that that's what was my process for a long time, is, let's say, I was someplace and I felt scared and alone, I would ask, "So, honey, how are you feeling?" "Oh, honey, how are you feeling?" And I would do exactly that. If there was any upset, no matter how small, just ask. And I started getting to that point where I didn't have to journal it out. For many years, I journaled on this to find out who I believe this Nikki character is. And there was a stage that I was doing it that I wanted to skip it, and I wanted just to pretend I was awake. And I would hear people say things like, you know, "There's nothing to heal. You were already whole." And I'm like, oh yeah, I want to do that. I just want to get there. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to give you the mic.
Thanks, Nikki. I hate to interrupt. I got a couple of thoughts going on here. And the first is, you were talking about dealing with your little girl, and it took me a couple of seconds to catch on. And I think that you meant yourself. So when you were saying, "Oh, honey, how do you feel? How are you doing?" You know, okay. Is that a yes? Yes, the mic's open. Just one second, Robbie. Good. Okay. So you were dealing with the character, Nikki. And so that's good. I think that's very helpful. The second thing that I want to ask you about, and I'm going to, you know what, I'm going to give Robbie the mic and then I can come back and ask my questions after that. So I'm going to let go of the mic and, let Robbie take it to ask Robbie's question.
Aloha, all my brothers and sisters. Oh, I want some music, Alex. Give us some music tonight. I love you, brother. Yeah, I'm just kind of thinking about, you know, I criticize myself every day. It's hard. You know, I criticize myself and think, oh, my mom wanted a girl. I'm the boy. And then I was gay half my life. I had to go through that. And it's not a bad thing. But, I love Yolanda. And I love those old drag shows. Aren't they fun? They're so fun. And we got to put that on a big stage sometime, because I've done this with Michael Zonta. And Tony was involved with the Enlightenment thing we did, the Men's Alliance, homosexuals. And all that stuff. I mean, those scary things. And that's really a good point that I really liked about this tonight was that these girls were talking. I can't remember their names. But they were so beautiful and sharing from their heart. And all the love. And we all get stuck up in our stuff and all our rejection and we can't accept. And we turn to the booze, and we turn to God. And we all have to learn how to, you know, choose stuff and everything like that. But it's like, all of a sudden, I've got all these emails in my box for astrology readings, and I'm amazed that, because I have a self-worth problem, because my mom did not want me. She didn't want me. She wanted a girl. She dressed, I see you, Lynn. She dressed me up in drag and lipstick for the first 5 years of my life. I was a drag queen before Yolanda even thought a drag queen. So, anyway, I'm just sharing, love you all. We have approval issues. We all have, our resistance. And we need to learn to love each other totally and accept each other, which this room, can't I say this? This room has taught me to accept myself and you, no matter what. I love you all. All right, I'm going to sign off here.
Thanks, Robbie. I guess there was no question for you there in that, Nikki. So let me ask you the other question that I was going to ask. Let's see. Oh, yeah, and that was, and somebody asked earlier, I think it was Jim Dunn, asked earlier about who can say, who's awake, what criteria can be used. This touches on a point that you and I spoke about a little bit earlier on the this touches on a point that you and I touched on earlier in our discussion on the telephone before we started tonight, and that is, and I've heard Regina talk about this phenomenon as well, that is people who say, I'm already awake, and I know that you have had that experience, you know, while we don't want to deny who we are, I just want to know if you believe that there is a criteria by which to say, yes, this person is awake and that person is awake. Whether there's a scale of this thing, of awakeness, or whether it's all mental masturbation, whether it means anything at all. So, anyway, I realize that's a very broad question, but with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Nikki.
Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you, Robbie. real quick, I just wanted to answer the, there was another question. I don't remember at what point or who asked it, but there was a question about just making a decision to be happy. And for me, covering up and pretending was just not helpful because I was still believing the thoughts. You know, I would do things like, I am not a body, I am free. I want to know that. I don't want to ramble words. I want to know. I want to know the truth of who I am. I want to know only this. I do not want to talk words. So that being said, I don't know, Jacqueline. All I do know right now is that you know, I do not experience unconditional realization. But I do, what I do know is that also that there is still a surrendering happen. There is nothing to surrender in the ultimate sense, right? But there is still surrendering happening. But I cannot say that I'm not awake. It just doesn't seem like an honest comment. And I also don't think it's an honest comment to say that I'm not. Both sides just don't really, it just doesn't feel. So the other side of this pendulum swing is the temptation to judge others' awakening. I'm going to open up right here. There is this, by Ramana Maharshi, he's talking to his disciple, if there be 100 self-realized men, will it not be the greater benefit of the world? And Ramana Maharshi says, when you say self, you refer to the unlimited. But when you add men to it, you limit. You limit the meaning. There is only one infinite self. Right? There is only one infinite self. So the deeper I go into this, there is less and less Nikki to claim anything. Right? To claim anything. There is only you. Self with a capital S. There is only this. And it goes on to say, the disciple asks another question. In Europe, is it not understood by the people that a man in solitude can be helpful? Because, you know, they have problems in Europe and America. They just don't understand this. And this is what I had shared with Jacqueline is, Ramana Maharshi turns to him and he says, never mind Europe or America. Never mind the ones that are claiming awakening. That's what I put in there. Where are they except in your mind? Realize your true self. And then all is realized. So it's not very often that I will talk about anybody else's path. I trust everybody's path. I trust that everybody is right where they need to be. The only thing that I need to do is realize self. And so never mind. never mind. It was a complete distraction, and I fell for it for a time. I didn't fall for believing that I was that, but I would talk to friends and have sessions with people that claimed that they were awakened. And when they would describe it, it was what I was experiencing. But see, there's still a heavy, you know, me that was listening. So I'm not really quite sure where they were at. Anybody else have a question? And I don't, being awake does not seem to be a constant for most people. It seems to be at varying degrees. Ramana Maharshi is really somebody that I trust, and that is not what I get from him. That is not what I get from him. And I do have to say that I have had a mind awakening. It's a much more flexible mind. It is much kinder and gentler and surrenderable. I just made up a word. Right? But mind awakening is not what I'm talking about. That's not what I'm talking about. So I'll give up the mic.
Nikki, a phrase that you used earlier a couple of times really resonated with me. You talked about telling the truth blamelessly. Can you tell us what you mean when you say that?
Thank you. I love that because there's two parts of this. There's the ultimate truth, right? And then, for example, if I'm lying to myself and pretending like something is not the way that it is. So one of the first experiences that I had with that is that my sponsor would ask me about my life. And I said I had a perfect husband, I had perfect children, and I had a perfect childhood, that nothing ever happened. Now, if it's just a decision to be happy, and I am miserable and acting out and sabotaging myself, that didn't make any sense. I think I was using affirmations at the time. I was heavily into affirmations. And so I had really, really gotten to the place where everything was perfect. Now, that is not true. That is not true. I wasn't able to tell the truth. So she had me start coming out of denial and start telling the truth. Now, the ultimate truth, right, is naturally experienced or arrived at when I was able to start doing the other. Because avoidance is just saying that there is something that I'm not wanting to face. And the avoidance for me was that I believed that I was, well, as clear as I can possibly say it, is that I believed that I was a piece of shit. And that's why I had been taken from two families. And, you know, I had proof. At least I perceived I had proof that I was unlovable. So pretending like those things didn't happen was not working. So I had to start telling the truth about those, which is ultimately nothing. That's the amazing. That's the paradox. All of this blows my mind. How the more I face it, the more I shine the light on these beliefs, I see that they were just made up. They were never true. And then naturally what steps in is what is, and complete acceptance. So I'm going to let go of the mic. Blamelessly. Blamelessly, it completely means that I'm not looking for somebody to blame. I'm not going back in time. I'm not going, even if back in time means an hour ago, I'm not going there to find somebody to blame. Blamelessly, I'm looking at how, what came up for me, what I'm believing about myself in that moment. And when I question it, whether it's by doing the work or doing the six-step process or MPP's process, any of those things, once I question these thoughts, once I question these beliefs, it is so true that they let go of you. These beliefs just let go of you. And then you're able to see what is. How do I deal with thoughts and emotions? I don't take them personal anymore. I just don't take them personally anymore. It's like sitting in a room and somebody calls you whatever. Just something really starts happening. And this is the part that I don't understand how it works, why it works, where the unattachment comes, but grace does happen and move in. I don't know at what point of my journaling or at what point of questioning my thoughts did they stop really looking personal, like they were mine. Now, I try to be careful with that, because if you sat there with me and started telling me your beliefs, there is just something that is constant here, and there's nothing that buys into your story. Right? Nothing that'll buy into the story. So that, I do have to say, is just grace that comes in and just liberates us and sets us free. What, you know what jumped up in my mind when you said that? Do you feel at this point that your soul is liberated from the will of life and death? What could ever not be liberated from the will of life and death other than our thoughts? Seriously. I mean, really go in there and investigate that. Right? What could possibly need liberation from the will of life and death other than our thoughts? And so that's really what this is about learning to question those thoughts and question those beliefs. I love that question. That's beautiful. Anybody else have a question? It really is beautiful. I'll let go of the mic if somebody would like to ask a question.
Okay, certainly don't want to prevent anyone else from asking a question. I encourage you guys really, to open up and ask Nikki. You know, it's really interesting because, you know, if I were to encounter, Nikki and Ramana Maharshi standing together, I'd feel much more comfortable asking Nikki a question. You know, it's just, Nikki, just seems like, just a regular gal, right? Like just one of us, but she is so clear, and I know that that's, I know that is the reason, that Regina received so regular. I know that is the reason that guidance came in for Regina, because, you know, for me, in my mind, in Jacqueline's mind, Nikki just makes all of this feel so tangible, because I can look at Ramana Maharshi or Eckhart Tolle or Nisargadatta Maharaj and say, gee, wouldn't it be nice? But here's somebody who is really, really relieved herself of the suffering that most of us experience in day-to-day life. I mean, we can all talk the talk. I mean, I can tell you every single thing that A Course in Miracles says, and I understand every single thing it says intellectually. But here is an opportunity to really be with somebody who is reaping the benefits of letting go of the I am bad thought, of letting go of the belief that this liberation is for somebody else. So here's Alex, and I'm going to give up the mic, and I believe that's Alex, and let Alex ask his question.
Thank you. want to ask, do you know what you're doing from day to day, what the plan is for you, what you're going to be doing next week or next month or next year? And how's your everyday disposition feeling about life? What motivates you? Thank you.
Thank you so much. I love that. I think David's in here. David, you're in here. What's my disposition like? I'm trying to remember the first thing you asked me, but you'd be happy to share. I will definitely give you the mic, because it just so happens that David Hemphill gets to see me. He lives here in Ardmore, Oklahoma. I don't have any idea what's going to happen next week. I have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. I have absolutely no desire whatsoever to plan. And I am moved to do. Right? I'm just constantly just moved. I do not feel... This is really the best way I can describe it. And I shared it with our class on Wednesday night. I'm looking for the paper that I wrote about it. But the best way to describe this is I was driving for hours, and there was no thought of braking or turning or putting on the blinker. There was just, I was being moved, right? And then there was a period of, now, when I'm talking about this, I'm not talking about that same being in phenomenon where you're lost in thought, so you're not present with what is. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about completely being present. And then there was this thought, thinking that I'm doing this. And I was cracking up laughing because, you know, that whole entire drive, there was no thoughts. None whatsoever. And then the thoughts came in. And I was able to question, to whom are these distracting thoughts arise, and it fell away again. But the mind really has no thoughts to help movement. It just happens. And Alex, I really hope that I answered your question. If I didn't, I'd love to give you the mic back. David, do you want to answer some of that for me?
Yeah, sure. I'll speak on that. I can just talk about my experience with Nikki. It was written very well. If you go on to the Awakening Together website under the Board of Trustee Members, you'll see what's written in her biography, and you'll see her husband saying that the difference was between chaos and peace. That's how drastic it was. And I didn't experience Nikki in chaos. I had met her after her experience 5 years ago. But the peace of being with her, that is present everywhere. You can see it. And the way that it ends up looking on the outside is she's able to listen to people and to be with people no matter what's going on for them. And so you see lots of people very comfortable and very intimate with her. I also have the experience of being able to share anything or hold any kind of space that I need to hold with her. She's available. That's the best word, is she's available. She's available for anything that comes up. And when you go away from kind of the people and you go to the circumstances, she's available for any circumstance that comes up. When there's arguing inside the house, all of the kids we're all fighting, there's not a pushing it all away or denying it. She's open to all of it. And she kind of holds that no matter if it's something I would say is good or something that would be perceived as bad. So she holds a space. open is the word I would use. So that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you, David. Yeah, that was great. Nikki, I have another question for you. When I was querying Regina about how this satsang should go, she said that one of the questions she might ask if she were here was that she noticed a shift in you. I think she said around 2011, and she might ask you what caused that shift. And so I'm going to let go of the mic and let you answer that one.
I don't even remember what happened last week. Let's see. Okay. Well, we moved from Oklahoma. I mean, let me take that back. We lived in Las Vegas, Nevada, to Oklahoma. And I really had a lot of things that I became willing to let go of when we moved here. There was still some identification with a home, a car. No, there was still an identification with the success of my job. And every single morning I would brush my teeth and I would constantly say, I'm willing to be where you would have me be. I will go where you will have me go. And I heard the thought Oklahoma and I thought, oh no, not that I'll go anywhere but there. And, you know, that was definitely in a joking manner because when you're moved to go someplace, it doesn't matter where the location is. Just become willing. And so just the move to Oklahoma and all the beliefs that I had underneath this idea of Nikki, a lot of stickiness was let go of. And I also want to go back a little bit to you had asked the question about the ask the little girl. And I really want to talk about that for just a second if you don't mind, because this was really important on my journey. I really constantly believed that sooner or later, one day, one of these negative thoughts, one of these condemning thoughts are going to get me to get it together, pull it together. You know, I really was addicted to these thoughts, and I genuinely thought one day. And so I was asked by my mentor at one point to get a picture of myself and to become willing to, when a situation arises, and the six-step process, I was blown away by Choose Again when I met Diedrich, because the six-step process was really close to the same process. Just, it was just so clearly written. It was just amazing that it was so similar. But I was asked to imagine that I'm sitting with the little me that decided that this was true, that this event, this situation meant something. And so Jim had said something about blameless, he thought might be about innocence. And that's beautiful. That's close to the same thing, because there's only innocence when you do it blamelessly. And just looking, you know, doing this inquiry into what I was believing in that moment. And so if I was given Ramana Maharshi way back then, who do you think you are, right? Who am I? I'll tell you who I am. And so I think that for myself, this was such an important process of letting go who I thought I was. And so the beginning of that was just bringing that me, even though it's illusory, but that me that believed that this situation happened because I am bad. Right? That this situation happened because I am bad. And so it's the, oh honey, as I'm talking to that part of the personality that is believing something about herself. That's it. Just that kind, loving parent, just consistently saying, what are you believing about yourself? And just by doing this, just by this consistency, there is this this happening that happens that it automatically does it with someone else when they're believing their story. Because you no longer, there is nothing that can convince me otherwise. There is this holotropic breathing experience that I did in Costa Rica at Choose Again. And although I'm really, it's really important that I do share that, you know, experiences are passing. What you are can never pass. What you are is not an experience. But an experience can open us up. It can just crack us open. And I had this experience of in a holotropic breathing. And I was in the womb. Did I already share this? I might have already shared this. that I was in the womb and I knew the truth of me. I knew there was, and when I say the truth of me, I was not Nikki. There was no Nikki. There is nothing special about Nikki. There is nothing special about the personality. It was all there is. All that there ever could be was in the womb. And it was about to be birthed as this personality. And then the, you know, the idea or the concept was heavily bought into that I was unlovable. And then in another holotropic breathing, I experienced myself, the true self. It's so difficult to say it with just words, but it is not minus anyone. Right? And what did Ramana Maharshi say is once I say a man, then I am limiting the unlimited. It is not possible. So in this experience, I am awareness. And I'm awareness as this person is raping someone. Right? This is all in the holotropic breathing. And awareness is just present. Awareness is just there. There is no judgment. There is no, it is just as alive in this being who has forgotten who they are as they, it is in the being, just about to be birthed. That is the truth. And so what is changing, can never be. We just fall asleep to it and forget who we are. To me, somebody, Jim had said a large part of awakening is letting be. I think that a large part of our surrendering, yeah, is letting be what is. I'm not energizing. What's your name? You guys, I have Alex. Hi, Alex. Isn't that so true? That is so true. I remember one time I was having a conversation with a couple people, and all I could do was just cry. I mean, it just happy, happy tears of joy, because words just felt as though that it couldn't even touch on it. Can't even begin to touch on it, right? So yeah, it is amazing, Alex. And it's that constant surrendering to that until there's nothing left to surrender. There's nothing left to surrender. I love how... Okay, come on, what's his name? He helped publish A Course in Miracles. What is his name? Kenneth Wapnick. Kenneth Wapnick said, and I had heard him at Choose Again in one of his recordings, and he had said, again, Ken Wapnick, as long as you believe that the person looking in the mirror, that could be who you are, there is more to surrendering. There is more to surrender. That's beautiful to me. That is beautiful. There is nothing more beautiful than to find out that I have never been separate. I can't be separate from you. I can't be separate from all that is. It's only a thought that says it, that it, that is so. Right? Anybody else have any questions? I'm going to turn the mic over to you. Alex put, my favorite quote from Ken is, this is not a pole vaulting contest. So true. And Lynn asked, when you drop the body, where do you think you go? I have no idea. I have no idea. I don't have any idea. I don't even know where I am right now. I have no idea where I am right now. And I love questions like that, Lynn. And if I was sitting with you, I would have you investigate and not just listen to any pointers, but really to go in and investigate. To investigate who you are. Right? And Alex is asking, can I talk more about this yes attitude? Oh, that's cute. How has this yes attitude changed my life? You do still say no at least once in a while. Yes, absolutely. I will say no, but I don't feel that I say no. Yeah. Yes, David is right. All the time, actually. All the time. I actually ask my kids to brush their teeth and to use manners or to put their phone away. The yes attitude is saying yes to what I'm moved to do. It would be inaccurate for me to say that I ask what should be done. Does that make sense? You know, like that moment before I left the mirror while I was brushing my teeth and asking, you know, I know what Regina's talking about. Where should I, I will go where you will have me go. I will be what you would have me be. That was something that I used to do. And I no longer feel that there is this separate desire or this separate movement. I feel like I'm being done. Yes, and do ask constantly until do ask constantly until there's nothing to ask. I really highly recommend that. Do not, whatever you do, do not judge where you are exactly right now. Yes. And Lynn, I agree 100%. In fact, I know there was never a separate movement. There could never have been. But until that is your realization, do exactly that. I may have at some time, no, that I'm going to take may have way out of there because that's not true. I have at periods of time thought that I was going to become something. right? Like, if I get the course down, you know, I can be this and I can be that, or, and that is just no longer. any thought, and I'm going to leave with this, unless somebody else has a question. I really had felt that there was absolutely no reason for me to, you know, talk about this, really. And I said, you know, if I was told that I needed to learn how to clean toilets at a mission home, or if I was told that I needed to be a security guard at a prison, I will do anything. You know, whatever I move to do, I will do just that. And then, I don't know how long ago, maybe Jacqueline knows, but then Regina asked me to start stepping up and doing things. I said no to that. And it was not I was moved to say yes. So, actually, I was saying no on the inside, but my mouth was saying yes. Yeah, maybe 6 months ago. Well, she had first talked to me about it when we were at the, in Colorado, the first time. So, as soon as she said that, I became very uncomfortable, and I noticed that I still had a lot of, beliefs around it. And then, when we were in Santa Barbara and I met Timothy Conway came up to me, and I believe that he looked me in the eyes. Yeah, it was over a year ago, and I don't actually think it was Regina that talked to me about it. It was somebody else that talked to me about it, and I was quite hesitant. Anyway, Timothy Conway looked at me and he said, "You need to share this bliss with everyone and everything." And it was right then that I realized that I do think that there was a me that thought that I shouldn't do that. Isn't that interesting? There was a me that thought that I shouldn't do this. And that wasn't surrendering to what is. Now, I do not believe for a second that I wouldn't still be talking to you right now if there wasn't still resistance. But I was able to really see that resistance in that moment. Like, who do I think I am? I think I'm a Nikki that that shouldn't show up, or shouldn't, you know, that's just so funny. So funny. Oh, that's beautiful, Lynn. Thank you, honey. Like I said, Alex, I really feel as though the thinking mind is really surrendered. You know that there is a head awakening, if that makes sense. That's all I can say. That's all I know. But I'm going to turn the mic back over to you, Jacqueline. I love you.
And I love you. Oh, wow. That's beautiful. I am so moved. I am so honored to have been a part of this with you tonight. And I'm so honored to serve with you in the way that I'm being led to serve with you. So thank you, Nikki. Thank you, everyone, and I will turn the mic back over to Lynn. Thank you.